Yep, we are just here together having a conversation, and we are officially live. Welcome to Elevate Today podcast. I'm super happy to be here with someone who deeply inspires me to press into my creative side, and also someone that I'm really happy to see on a very consistent basis. We actually do life together now, working for our Lifestyle Training Center and developing a movement in the fitness industry with that team. So I'd like to introduce you, Lo. Welcome to the show.
What up, Hannah? Thank you for having me.
Yes. So it's actually, how long ago did we meet?
I've been at Lifestyle for a year, since the beginning.
So, since the beginning, and yet we're about to hit. In 1 month, it'll be a whole year.
Yeah, so I was there before the grand opening, about 3 months before the grand opening. So I think we might have met during the grand opening time.
And how did you get connected to Lifestyle?
So I trained with Coach Murph outside of Lifestyle a couple years prior. And I trained with him at the park one or two times. And then when I came back into getting serious about boxing, he invited me to Lifestyle.
Okay, wow. Yeah. Okay. So somehow Lifestyle, we all ended up together. We're a team. We really are creating like a fight family, and it's super special. So the first question I want to get us going with is, what has Coach Murph taught you in the years you've been training with him?
So I've been training with him full on for the full year. And we specialize in Western boxing. And outside of just martial arts, he teaches me a lot about his philosophies and mindset, coming from the perspective of a career athlete and fighter. And he shares with me a lot of knowledge in regards to the way he sees things and how he approaches training and building people. And I appreciate that a lot about him, because he's a teacher, an instructor. He's trained many people, myself and you included, right? And he's trained young men from when they were kids all the way up to adults. He's trained champions. He's worked with champions, and he's been all around the world. So outside of just the fighting itself, he shares with me and teaches me a lot about his perspective and what it means to develop as a fighter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy how a lot of us, we've come together in the name of fighting in martial arts, but there is so much more depth into what we're creating, like a family, a brotherhood, a community, not really a sisterhood, but like a family, you know? And it's crazy how the skills have come along to be like a lot of creatives. So I really kind of see you as a master of the art of being a creative genius, because I was actually listening to your guys' episode before, and how you managed to use your art to escape the 9-to-5, even your own mental anguish through art. And so I want to ask you, how were you able to change your whole life to be centered around art, the martial arts through tattoo art, and really allowing yourself to press in like your heart, and instead of clocking in and following that system?
That's a good question. So if we're going to start from the beginning, I use art ever since I was a kid as a means of an escape from the reality that I was living in during that time. And what it provided for me was I had control over my thoughts and my opinions, and people didn't have to think for me, or the transgressions or just the emotions and personalities of people didn't affect who I was. And so I used art, drawing first as a kid, as a means to go in there and just be able to create whatever I wanted, and not even necessarily to create something beautiful or to create something on a large scale. It was more just I could go in here and just scribble a bunch of stuff on this paper and no one could say anything to me, you know. I could write bad words on there. I could draw whatever kind of pictures, and I get to create my own story and my own opinion for that. And so having that as kind of my foundational philosophy that I was able to develop as a kid, growing up, I worked a lot of different jobs. So besides drawing, tattooing, painting, I have a lot of other skill sets, and that comes to technical skill sets. It comes with working with tools and all different types of backgrounds. And one day when I was able to become a tattoo artist at a shop, I was already tattooing on the side whenever I could, just for leisure and as a means of just my own self-expression, because I still maintain that philosophy of being able to express myself through that, right? And when I became a tattoo artist full-time, it didn't seem like a job. It just seemed like something that I didn't have to go to school and study for, starting from like the ground basics and the fundamentals of drawing and things like that, because I've been doing it since I was 6 years old. But then other skill sets that I go into, I had to go to vocational programs, or I had to learn from the ground up, starting at entry level positions and things like that. Mm-hmm. But even in, as a tattoo artist, I had to learn some fundamentals, but just the natural love and passion for the art was already there. Mm-hmm. And when I first started there, I would be the first one in and the last one out. Well, we work together at Lifestyle. You understand how I work, my work ethic, right?
They're at 4 a.m. in the morning, and then I see you at jiu-jitsu at 6:30. Oh, hi. You're here again.
Yeah. And so when it came out to the tattoo shop, so a little background about me and how I live my life, like, it's kind of nomadic. I go from place to place. I just, I'm a free bird, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I don't really have attachments or responsibilities to like starting a family or things like that, right? Mm-hmm. And so when I started the tattoo shop, I just invested all my time there. Mm-hmm. First one there, drilling like 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, and some days 16, 18 hour days, you know? But I never looked at the clock. It was just something that I did. Okay. And so that helped me kind of even become even more free in a sense. Mm-hmm. Because then now it's like, I don't have these mental pressures of holding a timeline to myself and having to work at a certain pace. Because to put it very simply, when I wake up, I don't need to be told to go to work. Because when I wake up, I'm already going to go and do that anyways. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so translating that over to martial arts, it was the same thing almost. Because when I was a tattoo artist, I kind of like to look at myself as like an outlaw artist. Mm-hmm. Like I lived that lifestyle, you know, like tattoo artist. And then I would go outside and, you know, be a part of whatever raunchiness that I was a part of. And I would live that lifestyle as very toxic. And so it came to a point where recently I no longer wanted to identify as a artist or just this party animal or whatever it is. Now I want to identify as like, I want to make life my canvas, you know? Mm. I don't want to escape through my art anymore. I'd rather just empty myself out into life and make that my canvas. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so that's how I live like that.
I love how you say like, we can choose the things that we allow to identify ourselves. Mm-hmm. And you know, I actually noticed that is happening for you right now, because as like, in being into branding and social media, it's important to pick a niche and stick with it for the sake of growth and like niching. But I noticed like picking one thing and sticking to it is actually really challenging when you're like so expansive. And I see like at heart you are a teacher, like you have so much to share, like you are a philosopher, but you've been portraying art. And so lately it's been really cool to see you like step into this element of philosophy and truth and like getting thoughts turning and not sticking with just one niche, you know. And so how has that been for you? Have you felt like it's been like a, like you have to explain to people these shifts that you're going to because they expect tattooing and art from you?
So thank you, by the way, for saying all these nice things about me and mm-hmm. actually taking the time to get to know me as a person. And as a friend, I want to say that I appreciate that very much. That means a lot to me. Okay.
Thank you. Yeah.
And so my philosophies and the things that I share, so I'm also a teacher. I teach art. Mm-hmm. But I don't just teach technical art. I also teach the philosophy of art. Mm-hmm. And the mentality that you need to develop to become a artist or tattoo artist specifically too. Because it requires a mindset. And we help nurture and develop that. And just throughout my own personal experience, I've been able to teach art. I don't have a teaching degree. I spent very little time in school. But just being around people and watching seminars and just learning on the internet and things like that. And art, I don't have to write anything down. I don't have to plan anything down because it's so ingrained into me. So when I come into a classroom setting, I'm able to teach it like very, almost effortlessly. Okay. And when it came to sharing my philosophies, I use social media as a means to express myself. I never look at my social media as like just a tool to make money or to shape it up to look a certain way or anything like that. My whole life is an expression.
Yeah.
So if I want to go on there and I want to say what I have to say and what's on my mind, like, I'm gonna share it, you know, for the good and the bad, for however people may perceive that. Okay. And the philosophies really started when I started my sobriety and I really went sober. Like, I went sober not only from drugs and alcohol, but I went sober from people, environments, conversations, a lot of the mental things too. And I isolated myself, and I was isolated for about 13 months. And I lived in a little shack inside of my tattoo shop that I built. It was a little small room. You couldn't even stretch your arms out all the way. You know, I had a little bed in there. I lived in there for quite a while. And it was very painful. So I was able to use social media as a way to, at the end of the day, just express myself. And I will be honest, a lot of times going through sobriety, but before I would just be a very numb to my emotions. And when I first started sobriety and I was talking to people who were already going into that path or would have already walked that path, and psychologists and therapists and things like that, I realized that like I couldn't remember the last time that I felt certain emotions. And so through sobriety, after a while, you know, like you stop becoming numb and that shell kind of melts away, and then you start feeling emotions again. So sometimes when I'm feeling uplifted, like I was feeling really good and I was able to feel some kind of happiness again and things like that, I would share it on my social media exactly how I felt, put into the best words that I possibly could. But sometimes you also have to feel the other emotions, which was also anger, anxiety, and, you know, a lot of those type of things come up. And so there would be a spectrum of different philosophies that I would give. But at the end of the day, that was just honestly who I was. And it really helped me as an outlet, you know? Because I really felt like I had nobody and nobody could understand me. And I was like, I didn't want to talk to anybody because if I were to look for a support system within my friend group during that time, no one was really on that path of trying to go that way, you know? And so through social media, I was able to talk to people. Sometimes I felt it was disingenuous, like these people don't even know me, you know? At first you're like, what the heck? You have this self-defense mechanism thing built up. And sometimes I meet really kind people because they will be masters or like people I respect through their work that I see on social media. They'll reach out and they'll talk to me. And I found a lot of relief in that. So I'm very grateful for social media and Instagram. And it allowed me to connect to people and for me to like empty my thoughts in that way. Yeah,
it's cool because I feel like I, all of a sudden your posts were just like super speaking to my soul. And that's like I'm not used to seeing that kind of depth on something like social media, you know? It's pictures and a little bit more safe because no one wants to be that person sharing their emotions, but you broke this like depth, which I feel like has gotten to a lot of people, especially at the gym because we do life together so much. Can I read something you posted?
Absolutely.
All right. I want to go into it because I think that this is a crucial point to like self-development and like gaining freedom from the mental anguish to understand this principle.
Okay.
All right. I'm capable of achieving and obtaining anything in my desire. I enjoy having the minimal necessities that I may use only my heart, mind, and body at its raw state to navigate through this life experience using skill, integrity, and character. I do not want your love, money, or attention if it's based off of the material things I possess or the accolades I have gained. If you strip yourself of all those material things you attach your identity to and you feel you are nothing, then I may recommend you realize the opportunity to start over.
Okay.
What birthed those thoughts?
First, it was sometimes during my reflections, rather than just reflecting on the experiences that I get to share with people or the experiences throughout that day, I spend a lot of time by myself. And so I have to reflect on how I feel at that moment in my present state and where my mind is at in terms of how I view things and why I do things the way that I do. And a lot of people, because during that time, and I still live like this, I live in a very small room and I have just the bare necessities. I have this little camper bed that you use for camping and you pull it out, and I don't even have a table, you know, nothing like that. I have very bare minimum things. I got rid of all of my possessions. I used to live in a home. I used to have all of a nice car, a couch, TV, all that good stuff, you know? Mm-hmm. But being in that specific situation, I sat and I thought to myself, like, why am I living like this? You know? Because mm-hmm. I like to talk to myself in a third person sometimes and just like, why am I living like this?
Yeah.
What are the benefits, and or do I feel angry, or do I have some type of resentment against myself? What is it, you know? And I know that I'm not angry at myself for living like this because I made a choice mm-hmm. to do that. And I find comfort in that. What are the benefits of that? Is that I removed all false senses of comfort that people may have. Like, for example, let's say for people who do fitness or people who are fighters. Mm-hmm. If you have the cushion of comfort in the back of your mind, like a sweet, loving home, which is completely fine, or a nice warm bed and, you know, all of these nice amenities that you may have at home, then that's going to get in the way of you exercising your full potential. Because when I wake up, I don't even own a blanket. So when I wake up and I go to the gym, it's like, what, am I gonna give up and go home? Like, what is home? Mm. You know? So that allows me to find comfort in my day-to-day activities inside of the process, no matter how hard it is, right? And for the next parts of that quote where it's like, I don't want people to know or love me by the nice fancy things that I have. Before, I had the ability to have all of those things. I had the ability to buy a nice home. I had the ability to drive a really nice car. I had the ability to have all of these pretenses that I feel that a lot of people in society use to represent themselves. Mm-hmm. And when I come and I meet you guys or I meet anybody and I interact with them, I want them to understand that who you are meeting, this is who I am. You could take everything away from me. I could have none of the luxuries that people may have, and I will still be the same person to you. It doesn't change who I am. I'm still just a growing person, but at the root of it all, I needed to understand who I really was. So I think that was a part of the process why I chose to start living like that. Was this all a facade? Do I even really want to be a tattoo artist? Do I even really want to do this? You know? What direction am I going? And so now every day that I live my life, since I've been living like this for a very long time, and it's become more extreme over the years, I guess, I know that when I do art or tattooing, I'm doing it out of my own choice. And when people come and they interact with me or choose to have whatever kind of relationship with me, mm-hmm. I know that they're not befriending me or having respect for me because of material things. Does it make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I think this was like the follow-up one, but it was like, one day I hope to cross paths with someone who can love me for the skill, integrity, and character I possess, not my attachment to the superficial or facade that people may try to fit in with this world. No. To learn how to care for me the way I need, to embrace me, even if the world does not. When that day comes, I will be ready.
Yes.
Do you feel like you've experienced that?
I have. So that part of it was actually coming from more of like a romantic place.
Oh,
yeah. Okay. You know, because at the end of the day, with the creative partners, like Dale, he's like one of my best friends, you know, and I know he's not a part of my life because I'm fucking a millionaire or something like that, you know. He's genuinely has been there for me every step of the way, has been very patient with me through all my emotions, through my sobriety. And you guys at the gym, it's like, you guys respect me for my character and my work ethic. I know this. And I know that I'm a kind person. I'm very open. And I like to believe that I'm not a dismissive person. If you're here in my presence, if you haven't done me any wrong, and you are just a person that's there, that's part of the gym, I'm always going to try to make it comfortable and show you love. But if you are someone who is antagonizing me or is threatening anybody at the gym, someone I care about, then I'm going to give you the exact opposite reaction. It's very honest, right? Mm-hmm. But for the most part, you know, it's like, I know people are genuinely themselves when they're around me, or at least I'm genuinely with them, you know? So that first part of it was coming from like a romantic place, because mm-hmm. you not get lonely sometimes, you know. I've been through many relationships, mm-hmm. and that was more like I wish to meet someone who takes the time to learn how to love me the way that I need, because in a lot of my personal experiences with relationships, and this is how I just see it, is that I spend a lot of time pleasing and trying to get to know and how to love them for the way they need. And in very little of my experience do I ever get that back. Maybe to a certain extent, but in reality, like, maybe that's one of my expectations, but I haven't found that full comfort yet. Mm-hmm. You know? Besides maybe the love of my mom, but even then, like, there is still a barrier there too. Okay. But yeah, it was just, I know that at this point in my life, going sober, my mind's clear, my body's clear, and I'm very in tune with myself, that if I meet somebody, I will still be the person to learn how to love them the way they need, because everyone needs it in different ways. Everyone goes through different experiences, different traumas. They need to heal in different places. And so you need to be sensitive in different places with people. You cannot treat every situation with a hammer. Yeah, sometimes you have to learn what kind of tools to use to help this person heal and love them, and what nutrients they need specific for their growth. And when I meet someone like that, and they meet me, and we're ready to meet each other on that level, then I'll be ready. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's what I mean.
That's beautiful. Yeah. And it's cool because you're acknowledging that you want a woman to acknowledge you for your skill, character, and integrity. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I think that we're going to go into this topic of acknowledging the fact that there's been a huge, like, male-female dynamic destruction. And perhaps it comes from an extreme observation of, like, OnlyFans culture and women over-sexualizing themselves. And then, like, men that love that stuff kind of, like, being that Andrew Tate culture. And so it kind of, like, we have a ultra female community that's like, men are trash, I hate them, and it's real because the pain is real. And then women disregarding things of a man that matter, and we see women like, how much money you got, how can you feed me, how can you take care of me, take, be a provider. And then it makes the man just be like, well, what can I get from you, take, instead of, like, around the topic of, one, romance, does your person pursue you for skill, integrity, and character? I think those words are done perfectly. And then even on the side of that, like you shared, being raised from your mom and having sister, how that even has changed your view to women, which I'm happy that you're picky when it comes to women. I'm happy that you see that women are so worth nurturing, but you should also have that mutually back in a romantic way. So with that point, go into being raised from your mom and having a sister, and how that made you view women differently than perhaps some others.
Okay. You want me to talk about the experience?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I was born in Vietnam, and my mom had me with somebody who already had a family, so they had an affair. And when I was born, we just didn't fit into that puzzle. And so my mom took me and my older sister, who had a different father, she took us over here to America. And I grew up never meeting my father ever. And so growing up over here, we have zero blood family over here, you know? Over the years, like, there's like people here and there that, you know, just like I meet an acquaintance that's related to my mom somehow to come over later, whatever. But for the most part, growing up over here, like, it was just us. And I didn't really, obviously, I'm a child, right? So I don't understand those type of things. And we never grew up in a stable home. So it's always moving. When we first moved here, we lived in a house with 9 to 10 people. It was an apartment building. Yeah. And so it was like either refugees or just struggling immigrants from Vietnam coming over here, coming together. Eventually, those people became somewhat like family, whatever. You know? But growing up with my mom, as a kid, I didn't really understand. Because I didn't have that male dynamic to kind of like show me the way. But my mom did end up getting with somebody, a man. And he was very abusive. And so I grew up not only in an unstable household, but I grew up in a very violent household. And so I didn't really understand like what it meant to not, to just be raised by my mother and my sister until this guy came into the picture, because he made it his job every day to let me know that he was not my father. And so
how would he do that?
He would verbally say it, you know, and just the way that he would treat me, especially if I made a mistake or something that he viewed as a mistake. He would punish me. But, you know, like, I'm not trying to throw anybody under the bus here, but I'm just a child sometimes, and sometimes he would take it overboard. And I feel like a lot of times he would just take his anger out on me when I'm just trying to understand.
How old were you when he came into the picture?
I was about 5 turning 6.
So you knew trauma since a child.
Yeah. And yeah, dude, like that became very apparent, you know, and I didn't really come to this realization of this appreciation for my mom and how hard she worked until I was about like my late 20s. Because imagine growing up and like my mom never spoke about me having a father. So when I grew up, like, it was just normal for me to just know my mom and my sister. Mm-hmm. I didn't understand the dynamic. Like, for example, like, I would, when I went to grade school, I would go over to a friend's house. And my friend would be getting spanked by his dad. And I wouldn't understand what was going on. And he would come out, he's like, man, I hate my dad. Like, dude, like, I can't believe he would do this to me. Da, da, da. And I was sitting there, and he's speaking, like, an alien language to me. Like, what are you talking about? You know, and so like my mom not having a real support system over here, people to rely on. She struggled a lot raising me and my older sister. She didn't speak English. She had a hard time learning English. She kind of just got by babysitting and having a daycare and things like that. And now she has to raise two very troubled kids. And obviously, she's not a fucking psychologist, you know? And she has her own generational trauma that has been inflicted on her. So she could only raise us the best she could.
Yeah.
And now, looking back, right? Like, seeing how much my mom struggled and how hard it is to keep a job and maintain it and be in a system where, you know, it's America, and to have enough money to take two kids to school and, you know, put clothes on their back and feed them. Some people out here can't even maintain a minimum wage job, and they speak perfect English, you know? I can only imagine how hard it was for my mom.
Yeah.
And so that experience, like, growing up, I know that even though I couldn't understand certain things, because me and my mom, we had a lot of conflicts. Me and my mom and my older sister, there was a lot of violence and arguments and things like that. Just a lack of understanding. Because as a kid, it's like, I didn't know that something was missing inside of me, and it filled me with rage, but I didn't know how to express it. And I didn't even know what it was. I was just always angry and frustrated, you know? But because my mom didn't know how to maybe navigate it as good as other parents, I will say this, is that she instilled love into me. Because at the end of the day, no matter how angry she would be at me, or how angry I would be at her, or how crazy and dramatic that the situations got, she would always make sure to tell me that she loved me and be there for me. No matter how much trouble I got in, I've been into a lot of trouble ever since I was a kid. I've been expelled from preschools and elementary schools. I've been to jail multiple times as a kid. I've been in trouble with the law countless times, a lot of violence, a lot of whatever. My mom would be upset, but my mom would always be there for me. And the number one thing that my mom allowed for me as a kid was that any friends that I had, she would never tell me that I could not hang out with somebody. And if she knew that I had a friend, she would embrace them 100%. They could sleep over, they could hang out, I could be at their house. She never yelled at them. She always loved them, even if they were bad kids or, you know, troubled kids. And she allowed me to have that dynamic in my life because she knew that I had no family. So if I could have friends, then, you know, that made her happy. And that what allowed me to kind of start understanding just having that love for an appreciation for people almost unconditionally too, you know? And so my mom instilled that into me. Like, she was always a loving parent, even to this day. And she's my best friend, dude, for sure. Like, I love her more than anything. So yeah, when just now too, like during my sobriety up to this point, I have such mental clarity that a lot of the anguish and hurt that I had when I was first going through my sobriety, because, you know, when the emotions come back, the experiences come back. And I started having all of these waves of, like, anger.
Yeah.
You know, like, man, why did my mom do that? Or why didn't my mom have my back when I was getting abused in whatever way? Or, like, blah, blah, blah. But thinking back, like, dude, she's only a human being too.
Yeah.
And I can only imagine how hard it is for her to lose everything because she needs to back up her kids, like the man sets the rules type of thing, you know? And I had that resentment against her for so long. But up until now, like, I have such mental clarity, like, dude, I'm tripping, man. Like, how could I even be mad at my mom for that? She's a human being and she still has my back to this day, no matter all of the gnarly things I've done in my life. And so it just filled me with love, you know, like an appreciation. And I really thought about it and I was like, she didn't teach me how to be a man directly, but she indirectly taught me how to be a man because she allowed me an experience where I got to appreciate the sensitivities and the kindness and love of a woman. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Wow.
That's really cool. The mother's love is, like, powerful.
Hell yeah.
Did you ever end up finding father figures? Or is that something you felt like if you don't have it, that's okay?
Dude, honestly, like, all the way up until I was about my early 20s, I kind of seek that in all guys or like older role models or just like influences that I had in my life. And it was more like, okay, like show me what it's like to be in a position where I show you that respect. And what are you going to do with that? You know? And that got me into a lot of trouble. Because just the community and the people that I was part of, like a lot of people were just troubled men themselves, you know? And I would be the type of person, and this is just part of my personality, like I'm pretty gung-ho, you know? Like if I'm going to dive into something, like I'm all the way, like let's go, you know? Yeah. And so a lot of things that they were involved with, instead of just listening to them for mentorship or something like that, like if you're doing that, I'm doing that, you know? And I learned a lot. And I also lost a lot, you know? Yeah. And so, yeah. But I will share this, is that I had to come to a realization during my sobriety, because before I hit that point where I needed to go sober, for those few years when my drug addiction and my alcoholism got really bad, the point of my conversations would be revolved around not having a father figure. Mm. It's like a broken record to some people, right? And so that was one of the first things I had to tackle when I first went sober, the first thing that I had to shave off. And I had to come to accept something, is that I am going to die never knowing what it feels like to have a father tell me that he's proud of me, you know? And so, you know, and other things that come with that, you know? And so I had to come to that realization and accept that. But I appreciate that though. Mm-hmm. Because when I have a son, I know exactly how much I'm going to tell him that I'm proud of him.
Yeah. Now I'll say this from, like, now that you are a man,
yeah,
and you are the man that God could want you to be, and you get to lead young people and open minds and inspire people to not, no matter how they were raised, be the greatness that they're destined to be. My question is, what do you think, what would you tell to someone that was raised similarly to you, going through the same journey of, I didn't have a father, I didn't have a mother, so I'm like, you know, ruthless. You can do whatever you want if you don't have that guidance. What would you say to them in their delusion of thinking there's some like craziness to being a man now that you are where you're at?
I would say that I want young people to know that as much as you want to grow up and have responsibilities and be treated with respect and be whatever it is that you fantasize or imagine that you want to be, that you are still young and that you are still growing. And because you are still growing and that you are young, you are susceptible to life and people. And I want to advise anybody, young men or women, that grew up with a mom, without a mom or without a dad or without both, is I recommend that you just do the things and follow the path that makes you feel good, happy. But also the second part to that is it makes you feel good, happy, and proud of yourself, but it doesn't harm other people intentionally. And honestly, sometimes that path might lead to drug addictions or alcoholism, which I don't want to say is a good thing. But in a sense, sometimes it is a good thing, because only through that path will you understand self-acceptance and self-love if you don't have any. But if you have a good heart already and a good head on your shoulders, but you're just lost and confused, I know you're trying to sometimes seek validation for people to be proud of you or acceptance from other people because you don't have that at home. Rightfully so. You don't have that at home. You need that. Everyone deserves that. Loving, nurturing people in your lives, because we're kids, right? Is it's okay to be proud of yourself. Mm. And the more you're proud of yourself, you'll find people that's proud of you. Whatever endeavors it is, whatever paths you guys choose to take, you're not going to go wrong either way. But I hope that at the during that whatever paths that you guys choose to take, that you find how to love yourself so that you may love other people. That's what I'll have to say.
Okay? Mm-hmm. Yeah. I want to go in a little bit of like the process of addiction.
Okay.
So specifically, talk about the exchange that happens as soon as you decide to give something up that you know isn't benefiting you, and the fact that it's actually not hard to give up a thing, a drug can be anything, it can be a non-existent ego or money or stress, but how giving up that thing comes with the emotions.
Yeah.
How did you face those emotions when the anger came, when the dreams came, when your brain was being flooded with things that that drug was actually protecting you from? How did you learn how to see the anger and like whatever it was and being like, this is part of the process, this is okay?
Definitely it helped because of, by the grace of God, during that time I was surrounded by therapists, recovering drug addicts, and psychology majors inside of my tattoo shop, all part of my staff.
Hmm.
Or just people that's going through that have worked through very painful times, you know, and they were supportive and they gave me such great insight. But a lot of it comes from yourself. So when I was going through those angers and things like that, so just talk about alcohol. I drank because it calmed me down. It gave me a sense of like easiness, and I love that. Every single night, I would after. Like a 12-hour shift, I would go straight to the bar and drink myself till I blacked the fuck out. Then I would wake up and go do it all over again. Every single day of my life. And I thought it was just fun at first, you know? Or like when I was a kid, like I thought it was fun. But when I went through my sobriety, I had this weird schedule mentally where I didn't want to go drink anymore. And so every single day, no, never fails, at exactly 7 o'clock, I start getting this huge wave of anxiety. It was like almost unbearable, dude. And I didn't know what to do with myself. I had to buy carbonated bottle sodas and drink that to imitate that I was drinking beer. Yeah. And it was just like fighting through it, because a lot of it is like, okay, your brain is, for lack of a better word, so melted and destroyed from years of drug abuse and alcohol abuse that your regulation systems for your emotions is maybe not be as strong as other people's. So when you get angry or you feel these emotions, you feel it very deeply, and you don't have those regulators in your brain to help stop that, or you don't have the mental tools to do that. And that was my problem. But having faith and taking care of my body and through exercise and fitness and sobriety from toxic people habits and tangible things, my brain started healing. And so I was able to process these emotions. I allowed myself to be angry. I allowed myself to be sad and feel it out. I allowed myself to cry. I allowed myself to be happy. Because every single time, which is funny, because not funny, now that I think about it, but it, when I was going through that process, every single time I would feel some type of joy, right? I remember I started having that emotion again. It would only last for 5 or 10 seconds, and then a huge wave of anxiety would hit me. Like, this cannot be real. Mm. Like, this fear, like, oh, it's going to go away, so I'm just going to try to numb it out in my head, you know? And I realized that I had a mental habit of doing that. But up to this point right now, it was a struggle, you know? It was a struggle going crazy. But the faith in God, faith in myself, and allow myself to heal physically, physiologically, I was able to heal mentally and spiritually. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah.
How comfortable are you talking about the anger?
We can talk about it. We can talk about anything.
Okay.
Yeah.
How'd you handle those ones? Do you ever lose people in your anger outrages?
Oh, man. When I was a kid, like, I would get very frustrated very easily. And when I would blow up, like I would take things very, in some people's eyes, very extreme. Okay. And so I would do things that's like very devastating. Like I would destroy things like really bad. Or I would like just threaten to leave the house and wouldn't come home for a few days as a child. Just angry and go around and just like destruction, you know. And then I, when I became older, being a part of the types of environments that I was a part of, like, ooh, when I got angry, like, oh, we're literally, I don't want to get into detail to incriminate anyone, but I would just be wrecking and destroying everything around me. One time when I was angry, I was renting a room at this place, and I got so frustrated and angry because we had just, there was an altercation. And I was drunk, and then this girl that was sleeping with me during that time, she was also drunk, and then she was blowing up. And I literally destroyed the whole place. Literally, I broke all of the sheetrock, and I destroyed the whole walls, and I broke down that whole motherfucking house. And that was just like one example of my frustration. And I had to stop myself eventually. Because I knew that, like, oh, dude, I have a heart, you know. I don't want to hurt anybody.
Yeah.
I don't want to destroy other people's things. So what did that lead to? That led to me just self-sabotaging myself.
What does self-sabotage look like for you?
A lot of times, I have been told throughout my life that I'm very talented, and I'm gifted in a lot of ways, and so I would build up like very. I would build up in a lot of certain areas where I would earn some type of like knowledge or gain some type of like ranking inside of a system of work or whatever it may be. And I would build up, and then I would look like a very, how should I put this? Like I have a lot of potential, and people would invest a lot of time and money into me. And then right before it gets good, I would either destroy it by my alcoholism or drug use or the negative things I was involved in, or I will pull out because of my self-doubt and say, fuck this, I don't give a fuck anymore. And I've done that so many times in my life, dude. Giving up so many opportunities to work at very high places and do all kinds of good things. And I destroyed all of those things, you know. And I had a habit of doing that. And that was a big part of my self-sabotage, besides obviously destroying my body and not giving a fuck, you know. So, yeah.
And then the cycle, is it over now?
So I feel like right now it is over to an extent, because with like tattooing, I reached many heights in tattooing. I've achieved many great things. Like I had a live exhibition. Mm-hmm. I've graduated all my apprentices. I started my own school. Mm-hmm. I saw through all my responsibilities at my shop, you know, and that was like monumental things, and I didn't give up on that. Mm-hmm. So that, along with my sobriety now, if I ever do catch myself trying to run away from a situation, I catch myself. I'm like, what are you doing? Or if I catch myself in temptation to go and have a drink or do whatever, I always tell myself, like, what are you doing? Why are you doing that? Because part of healing or changing my habits of self-sabotage, I had to learn how to be my own friend. And that was a very powerful thing that I learned through my early stages of sobriety. Was somebody was having a conversation with me, and we're just talking about all the good things we do for people and, you know, all the advice we give and how selfless we are. Mm-hmm. And during the halfway through the conversation, this person stopped me. He was like, hey, let me ask you a question. He's like, with all that being said, when is the last time that you were a true friend to yourself? And literally, like, when he asked me that question and we sat there and we're thinking about it, like, I broke down into tears. Because I did not remember. I don't even know if I ever was. Like, you would keep promises to everybody. You would try to fulfill, or at least you tried to keep promises. Yeah. You would give them everything. You'd be selfless and things like that. Mm-hmm. But I couldn't even keep a promise to myself to take care of myself and my own body. This is the only thing I really, truly own, right? Mm-hmm. And I had to learn how to recreate the relationship with myself. And that healed me from my self-sabotage. Yeah.
Dang. It's like you have permission to be your own friend.
Yes. You have to learn how to be your own friend. Trust in yourself. If I say I'm going to do this tomorrow, I'm going to go do it. You know, if I don't want to do this because it's harming me, I'm not going to do it. And I'm not going to let someone else tell me otherwise. Just like as if, and I shared this perspective with some women that I was talking to. And I was like, look at how you don't self-respect yourself. And I've had many conversations with different women about this because they do things that harm themselves. I was like, if your daughter was doing that, going out there sleeping with a bunch of men, for whatever reasons, doing a lot of drugs, putting herself in very questionable situations or whatever choices she was making, obviously you would love and try to tell her not to do that. So why can't you even tell yourself not to do that? Because that needs to come first. And me having those conversations helps me realize that with myself too. Because if I had a son and he was a fucking raging alcoholic, you know, or he was doing things that was harming other people, I would do everything in my power to make sure that he heals from whatever it is that's causing him to do that. So I must do that for myself first.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love that. Sometimes it seems strange to take a mother's perspective, but I think like thinking of loving people the way a mother would love them is like the easiest way to see right through people, see right through the insult, see right through the judgment that humans put on us. But then it's just like, dang, I hope you're good inside.
Yeah.
You know, to be mean to me, I hope you're being nice to yourself a little bit. Mm-hmm. And to have like a mother's love, a father's love of, would you want your baby girl, your baby boy doing that? Then don't do that to yourself.
Exactly. Exactly. Very powerful.
Mm-hmm. So what is it that brings you the most joy on the day-to-day now?
Ooh, okay. Really deep questions here, man. You can't even ask me just like how I'm doing. No, I'm just kidding. That's a very amazing question. Thank you for asking. Is I do live my life on a day-to-day basis now. Straight up. Mm-hmm. I have 24 hours in the day. Everybody has 24 hours. You know, no more, no less. And by the time when I wake up and when I go to sleep, I never stop working. Because I find fulfillment in that. Maybe I'm a workaholic, but I find rest too, you know, because I prioritize rest. But I want to make sure that at the end of the day, I tried my best, or I did to the best of my ability, to empty myself into my day. And when I go to sleep, I left nothing on the table. I'm out, lights out. Boom, wake up for the next day. I can't wait to wake up for the next day. I've been able to develop that love for life and this appreciation for it. Whereas like in the beginning, I was like, oh, fuck. I gotta wake up and I gotta go walk 45 minutes on this incline thing for da da da, and then go to work after, and then I have to go do this and da 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 da. And then I changed it from I have to go to I am allowed to go. And I am blessed that I even have 2 feet to stand up and walk and to go. Mm-hmm. And once I started shifting that perspective in that way, like you already know the enormous, maybe to some people, the enormous amount of work that I get done in a day, because my day is pretty filled in whatever ways. Some days is less than others. Mm-hmm. But I spend it exactly how I want, in the way that I want, and as long as my objective is through service to other people and to heal other people by healing myself or working on my skill sets. That's my ultimate purpose of life. That's what brings me joy. To really answer this question, what brings me joy is fulfilling my purpose. And my purpose, and this is part of my prayer when I pray to God every night, is that I'm grateful that I get to practice and develop my skill sets so that I may use them to help other people in whatever ways that I can. So that way I'm always working on myself so I can use those things to help other people, whether that be my physical skill sets, my technical skill sets, or my mental skill sets, or my spiritual skill sets. I'm God's soldier. So I would develop all of those areas as much as I possibly can by taking care of myself, so that I might help people heal. That's my purpose in life.
Dang, you're clear on that.
Yes.
As we get closer to the end of our conversation, I want to ask you, how do you develop the desire to want to help yourself? For other people listening, they're like, dang, I wish I had that zeal to wake up at 4 a.m. How did you get there?
I had to hit rock bottom, dude. Spiritually and mentally and physically. It's more mentally, though. I used to be a very intuitive person, and I used to have a huge passion and love for learning and studying. But through my addictions and the complexities of the traumas of my life, I knew that my mental was shutting down. And I lost one of my favorite things about myself is my mind. Mm. And I hit a point where I was actually contemplating suicide. Because I was tired of being numb and feeling all this. And it's just all the same shit. And people was like, everything just hurts, you know? Relationships, experiences, everything. Like, fuck all this. And as I was in that process, whatever little ray of hope or little spark of fire inside of me, imagine like you're walking over this bridge, and once you fully cross that bridge, there ain't no coming back, right? And so I was halfway up on this bridge, and a part of me was just like, I need to make sure that I did everything in my fucking power to make this final decision, and I'm not just strung out on drugs right now. You know, and I'm not just really hurt right now. Let me just make sure. And if I go back and I really try every single fucking thing possible, and I still can't get it, I walk over this bridge with my head held up high. Like, it's all good. Like, I tried my best, you know? And I wasn't ready. And I wasn't ready to do that because I needed to go back to make sure. And that's what started my path to sobriety.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's wild.
Yeah. Hell yeah, dude.
How long have you been sober?
So it's been an up and down road. Mm-hmm. My first stretch, I had very small relapses where like I had a drink or two here or there. Mm-hmm. But it was December of 2022. And then through that whole next year, like I was sober for the majority of the year. Mm-hmm. Dang. I had some relapses and stuff like that. That's the longest I've been sober ever since I was 14 years old.
14.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And so, and then from that point all the way up until now, I did have a string of relapses, and I had a major relapse once too, right?
Yeah.
I had a very big relapse where, I'm not going to lie, I stopped going to my responsibilities, and I was strung out, held up in the fucking backyard in the shack for like 8 days, just smoking, doing drugs. And it was bad because, like, when I was sober enough, I was just like, let me try it again. See if I have a different, like, you know what I mean? Like, if I have a different, you know?
That's crazy.
Make sure. And you know what I mean? Like, we start kindling that little fire. And then that fire turned into a big explosion, you know?
It was 8 days.
So there was just like, that was like the long, so there was like about a couple months of me just like here and there drinking and getting back into drugs and toxic habits. And then when I was at the peak of that, I didn't eat, I didn't sleep, I didn't drink any water, and I was just sitting in this fucking lonesome ass place just on drugs, you know. Dang. And that was when I was like, you know what, this is not it. And you know what my saving grace was lifestyle. Mm. Because I was like, I don't want to do this, I want to go back to fucking boxing, you know? Yep. Boxing is way cooler, you know? And yeah, that was cool. And I get to be around better people. And so I had boxing. And thank you to Coach Murph for being my big brother and always welcoming me back with open arms and always reminding me, checking him up on me and telling me that it's not the same without me there. And I appreciate that. And I love you to death. And I appreciate everyone at the gym. And I appreciate you, Hannah Banana.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, yeah.
One final question, because we're gonna have people listening to this.
Okay.
How would you like people to seek you, find you? What is your thing? Because you can be a lot of whatever you want. How would you like to be seen, presented?
Oh, as a that just me?
Well, first answer how you what you chuckled to, and then answer the next thing that you tried to clarify for.
I guess most people see me as a tattoo artist.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm known for in a lot of communities. But then now, like, in the communities that I care about, which is my personal community, you being a part of that, is that people are getting to know me more as a person. Well, through my philosophies, through my skill sets, through what I do with the gym and people in general. And so I don't want to be known as a tattoo artist. That's one of my skills. But I want to be known more as a human being here to help other human beings. At the end of the day, if I have to give up all of my other skill sets and I find another skill set that, like, okay, this fits into this puzzle right now and I need to exercise that, then that's just what I'm going to do. I'll give up tattooing if that's what it meant. I'll give up art if I had to create music or do whatever that I felt was more powerful in helping people during that time. Then it's all good, dude. Like, that's what God wanted, and I'll be more than happy to do that. Mm-hmm. You know, and my path right now, honestly, one of the things that I'm doing is I'm looking to get my PhD in psychology.
Jesus, wow.
Yeah, and we have this situation going on where I want to study psychology, and throughout that experience to get to that doctorate, I know that I'm going to have to apply my knowledge to real life work situations and create books and texts and things like that. And so for lifestyle, you know, we have fighting instructors, we have mm-hmm. strength and conditioning, yoga.
Yeah.
Through my studies, I want to develop a counseling branch inside the gym.
Wow, that's genius.
Yeah, and through my schooling, I'm going to be able to have the knowledge and the credentials to do that therapy and all the way up until I get my doctorates. Mm-hmm. Fuck yeah.
That's phenomenal.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
Yeah, so that's my path right now. Yeah.
And health and fitness, like, that's really how you heal, but you don't see therapists at the gym.
Yeah.
Well, one last message for the listeners. Any message?
I want to share something with everybody that I was learning through my sobriety. And I had a very bad Xanax addiction at once. I was popping anywhere from like 5 to 10 of them a day sometimes. And the reason why it made me feel good is because I would take one, and when it started kicking in, something as simple as drinking a cup of water felt amazing. I appreciated every single second of that. And when I was going through sobriety, I remember that experience, and I asked myself, why don't I just feel that normally? Why can't I just pick something up, like a water bottle or a cup of water, have a sip of it, and be filled with nothing but fulfillment and gratitude for that? Just that simple concept I have been working on ever since. And more I'm able to develop that appreciation. I'm not to that full point of maybe ecstasy or nirvana yet. Mm-hmm. But just that, maybe that simple mental tool. You guys may be able to look at it and be like, you know what? I never appreciate me drinking a cup of water. I don't even think about it when I do. It's just muscle memory. But really pay attention. Why is it like that? Why are you not focused on loving it? And that's going to open up a whole window of questions for you guys. And through those questions, I hope you guys may heal. And I hope you guys may be able to appreciate and love yourselves for the human beings you are. And so that you guys may be contributing loving members of your community.
Thank you, Will. I'm super thankful to know you. Yeah. I've been super inspired by you, and I'm thankful that you're just part of my social circle, and I could be talking whatever at the gym and you can enlighten me with some fact that makes me love myself better and like, you know, those conversations. But yeah. I really appreciate how much you love the people that we're surrounded by. Oh, yeah. How much you go the extra mile just to make people feel loved and to make people feel enlightened. And I hope, you know, nothing goes unseen, and it's just crazy how there's like this ripple effect of love, and I know you have a huge contribution to that. So thank you, and I'm excited to continue to see what you're going to be developing, and this will always be your platform. If you ever want to have another discussion on something you learned on psychology, it could always happen again.
Ooh. Well, thank you for that open invitation. Like I say to people that I care about, is that we have a lifetime to grow and to learn how to love each other and to get to know each other as peers, friends. And that goes for everybody at the gym and all the people that have love for me. We have a lifetime. And I truly appreciate it that Hannah opens her doors to the podcast for me to come on here to express myself. And for that, I'm deeply, deeply grateful. I want to cry right now, but I'm not going to because, yeah.
You're the best, Lo. I'm really happy we did this. Find us at Lifestyle. We're always there.
Hell yeah. Come get beat up, dude.
Come get beat up. All right. Peace out. All right.